actions, but he knew that his face gave nothing away. He'd been prepared for the way his brother Wolf surged up in anger to defend Anna this time. "Are you sleeping with him?" Isabel asked. "He's a good lover, isn't he?" Though Isabel was mated, she had a wandering eye, and Leah let her indulge herself as she pleased, a situation almost unique among werewolves. That didn't mean she wasn't jealous. Leo couldn't so much as look at another woman. Charles always felt it was an odd relationship, but it had worked for them for a long time. When she'd made a play for him a few years ago, he'd allowed himself to be caught, knowing that there was nothing serious about her offer. He hadn't been surprised when she tried to get him to talk his father into letting Leo expand his territory. She had taken his refusal in good humor, though. The sex had meant nothing to either of them, but it meant something to Anna. He'd have had to be human to miss the hurt and mistrust in her eyes at Isabel's thrust. "Play nicely, Isabel," he told her, abruptly impatient. He put a little force in his voice as he said, "Go home and tell Leo I'll talk to him tonight." Her eyes lit with rage, and she drew herself up. "I am not my father," he said softly. "You don't want to try the shrew act with me." Fear cooled her temper, and his too, for that matter. Her perfume might have hidden her scent, but it didn't hide her eyes or her clenched hands. He didn't enjoy frightening people. Not usually.
"Go home, Isabel. You'll have to swallow your curiosity until then."
He shut the door gently behind her, and stared at it for a moment, reluctant to face Anna, though he had no idea why he should feel so guilty for doing something long before he'd ever met her.
"Are you going to kill her?"
He looked at Anna then, unable to tell what she thought about it.
"I don't know."
Anna bit her lip.
"She has been kind to me."
Kind? As far as he could tell, kindness had been pretty far from anything that had happened to Anna since her change, but the worry in her face had him swallowing his sharp reply.
"There is something odd going on in Leo's pack," was all he said. "I'll find out exactly what it is tonight."
"How?"
"I'll ask them," he told her. "They know better than to think they can lie to me, and refusal to answer my questions or refusal to meet with me is admitting guilt."
She looked puzzled.
"Why couldn't they lie to you?"
He tapped a finger on her nose.
"Smelling a lie is pretty easy, unless you are dealing with someone who cannot tell truth from lie, but there are other ways to detect them."
Her stomach growled.
"Enough of this," he said, deciding it was time to feed her up a little. A bagel was not enough. "Get your coat."
He didn't want to take the car into the loop, where it would be difficult to find parking, because his temper was too uncertain around her. He couldn't talk her into a taxi, which was a new experience for him. Not many people refused to listen when he told them what to do. But then, she was an Omega, and not constrained by an instinctive need to obey a more dominant wolf. With an inward sigh, he followed her down a few blocks to the nearest L station. He'd never been on Chicago's elevated train before, and if it weren't for a certain stubborn woman, he wouldn't have ridden one this time. Though he admitted, if only to himself, that he rather enjoyed it when a rowdy group of thugs disguised as teenagers decided to give him a bad time.
"Hey, Injun Joe," said a baggy-clothed boy. "You a stranger in town? That's a foxy lady you have there. If she likes her meat brown, there's plenty here to go round."
He tapped himself on his chest. There were real gangs in Chicago, raised in the eat-or-be-eaten world of the inner city. But these boys were imitators, probably out of school for the holidays and bored, so they decided to entertain themselves by scaring the adults who couldn't differentiate between amateurs and the real deal. Not that a pack of boys couldn't be dangerous under the wrong circumstances. An old woman sitting next to them shrank back, and the smell of her fear washed away his tolerance. Charles got to his feet, smiled, and watched their smugness evaporate at his confidence.
"She's foxy, all right," he said, "but she belongs to me."
"Hey, man," said the boy just behind the one who had spoken. "No hard feelings, man."
He let his smile widen and watched them shuffle backward.
"It's a nice day. I think that you should go sit in those empty seats up there where you see your way more clearly.
They scuttled to the front of the car, and after they had all taken a seat, Charles sat back down next to Anna. There was such satisfaction in his face when he sat down that Anna had to suppress a grin for fear that one of the boys would look back and think she was laughing at one of them.
That was a prime example of testosterone poisoning, she observed dryly. Are you going to go after Girl Scouts next?
Charles's eyes glinted with amusement.
Now they know that they need to pick their prey more cautiously.
Anna seldom traveled to the Loop anymore. Everything she needed she could find closer to home. He evidently knew it better than she did, despite being a visitor. He chose the stop they got off at and took her directly to a little Greek place tucked in the shadow of the L-train tracks, where they greeted him by name and took him to a private room with only one table. He let her give her order and then doubled it, adding a few dishes on the side. While they were waiting for their food, he took a small, worn-looking, leather-bound three-ring notebook from his jacket pocket. He popped the rings and took out a couple of sheets of lined paper and handed them to her with a pen.
I'd like you to write down the names of the members of your pack. It would help if you list them from the most dominant and go to the least.
She tried. She didn't know everyone's last name, and since everyone outranked her, she hadn't paid strict attention to rank. She handed the paper and pen back to him with a frown.
I'm forgetting people, and other than the top four or five wolves, I could be mistaken on rank.
He set her pages down on the table, and then took out a couple of sheets with writing already on them and compared the two lists, marking them up. Anna took her chair and scooted it around the table until she sat next to him and could see what he was doing. He took his list and set it before her.
These are the people who should be in your pack. I've checked the names of the ones who don't appear on your list.
She scanned down it, then grabbed the pen back and marked out one of his checks.
He's still here. I just forgot about him. And this one, too.
He took the list back.
All the women are gone. Most of the rest who are missing are older wolves. Not old, but there's not a wolf left who is older than Leo. There are a few younger wolves missing as well.
He tapped a finger on a couple of names.
These were young. Paul Lebshack here would have been only 4 years a werewolf. George, not much older.
Do you know all the werewolves?
He smiled.
I know the alphas. We have yearly meetings with all of them. I know most of the seconds and thirds. One of the things we do at the meetings is update the pack memberships. The alphas are supposed to keep the Morok informed when people die or when new wolves are changed. If my father had known so many wolves were gone, he would have investigated. Though Leo's lost a third of the pack membership, he's done a fair job of replacing them.
He gave back the list she'd written. A number of names, including hers, were also checked.
These are all new. From what you've told me, I'd guess that they are all forced changes. The survival rate of random attack victims is very poor. Your Leo has killed a lot of people over the past few years in order to keep the number of his pack where it is, enough that it should have attracted the attention of the authorities. How many of these people were made wolves after you?
None of them. The only new wolf I've seen was that poor boy.
She tapped the paper with her pen.
If they didn't leave bodies and spread out the hunt, they could have easily hidden the disappearance of 100 people in the greater Chicago area over a few years.
He leaned back and closed his eyes. Then he shook his head.
I don't remember dates too well anymore. I haven't met most of the missing wolves, and I don't remember the last time I saw Leo's old second, except that it was within the last 10 years. So whatever happened was after that.
Whatever happened to what?
To Leo, I'd guess. Something happened that made him kill all the women in his pack except Isabel and most of his older wolves, the wolves who would have objected when he started attacking innocent people or quit teaching new wolves the rules and rights that belong to them. I can see why he'd have to kill them. But why the women? And why didn't the other Chicago Alpha say anything to my father when it happened?
He might not have known. Leo and Jaime stay away from each other, and our pack is not allowed to go into Jaime's territory at all. The Loop is neutral territory, but we can't go north of here unless we get special permission.
Oh, interesting. Have you heard anything about why they aren't getting along?
She shrugged.
There had been a lot of talk. Someone told me that Jaime wouldn't sleep with Isabel. Someone else said that they had an affair and he broke it off and she was insulted, or that he wouldn't break it off and Leo had to step in. Another story is that Jaime and Leo never got along. I don't know.
She looked at the checks that marked the newer wolves in her pack and suddenly laughed.
What?
It's just stupid. She shook her head.
Tell me.
Her cheeks flushed with embarrassment.
Fine. You were looking for something that all the newer wolves had in common. I was just thinking that if someone wanted to list the most handsome men in the pack, they would all make the cut.
Both of them were surprised by the flash of territorial jealousy that he didn't bother to hide from her. It was probably a good time for the waiter to come in with the first course of food. Anna started to move her chair back to where it had been, but the waiter sat his tray down and took it from her, seating her properly before he got back to setting out the dishes.
"And how have you been, sir?" he said to Charles. "Still haven't given up and moved to civilization?"
"Civilization is vastly overrated," Charles returned as he put the sheets of paper into his notebook and shut the cover. "As long as I can come up once or twice a year and eat here, I am content."
The waiter shook his head with mock sadness.
"Mountains are beautiful, but not as beautiful as our skyline. One of these days, I'll take you out for a night on the town and you'll never leave again."
"Philip!" A bird-thin woman stepped into the room. "While you are here chatting with Mr. Cornick, our other guests are going hungry."
The waiter grinned and winked at Anna. He dropped a kiss on the woman's cheek and slipped through the door. The woman suppressed a smile and shook her head.
"That one, always talking. He needs a good wife to keep him in line. I am too old."
She threw up her hands and then followed the waiter. The next 20 minutes brought a series of waiters and waitresses who all looked as though they were related. They carried food on trays and never said anything about it being odd that two people should eat so much food. Charles filled his plate, looked at hers, and said,
"You should have told me you didn't like lamb."
She looked at her plate.
"I do."
He frowned at her, took the serving spoon, and added to the amount on her plate.
"You should be eating more, a lot more. The change requires a lot of energy. You have to eat more as a werewolf to maintain your weight."
After that, by mutual consent, Anna and Charles confined their conversations to generalities. They talked about Chicago and city living. She took a little of a rice dish, and he looked at her until she took a second spoonful. He told her a little about Montana. She found he was very well-spoken, and the easiest way to stop a conversation cold was to ask him about anything personal. It wasn't that he didn't want to talk about himself, she thought. It was that he didn't find himself very interesting. The door swung open one last time, and a girl of about 14 came in with dessert.
"Aren't you supposed to be in school?" Charles asked her.
She sighed.
"Vacation. Everyone else gets time off, but me? I get to work in the restaurant. It sucks."
"I see," he said. "Perhaps you should call child welfare and tell them you're being abused."
She grinned at him.
"Wouldn't that get Papa riled up? I'm tempted to do it just to see his face. If I told him it was your suggestion, do you suppose he'd get mad at you instead of me?"
She wrinkled her nose.
"Probably not."
"Tell your mother that the food was perfect."
She braced the empty tray on her hip and backed out the door.
"I'll tell her, but she already told me to tell you that it wasn't. The lamb was a little stringy, but that's all she could get."
"I gather you come here often," Anna said, unenthusiastically picking at a huge piece of baklava. Not that she had anything against baklava, as long as she hadn't eaten a week's worth of food first.
"Too often," he said.
He was having no trouble eating more, she noticed.
"We have some business interests here, so I have to come 3 or 4 times a year. The owner of the restaurant is a wolf, one of Jaime's. I sometimes find it convenient to discuss business here."
"I thought you were your father's hitman," she said with interest. "You have to hunt down people in Chicago 3 or 4 times a year?"
He laughed out loud. The sound was rusty, as if he didn't do it very often. Though he ought to. It looked good on him. Good enough that she ate the forkful of baklava she'd been playing with, and then had to figure out how to swallow it when her stomach was telling her that it didn't need any more food sent its way.
"No, I have other duties as well. I take care of my father's pack's business interests. I'm very good at both of my jobs, he said without any hint of modesty.
I bet you are.
He was a person who would be very good at whatever he decided to do.
I'd let you invest my savings. I think I have $22.97 right now.
He frowned at her, all amusement gone.
It was a joke, she explained.
But he ignored her. Most alphas have their members give 10% of their earnings for the good of the pack, especially when the pack is new. This money is used to ensure there is a safe house, for instance. Once a pack is firmly established, though, the need for money lessens. My father's pack has been established for a long time. There is no need for a tithe, because we own the land we live on, and there are investments enough for the future. Leo has been here for 30 years, time enough to be well established. I've never heard of a pack demanding 40% from its members, which leads me to believe that Leo's pack is in financial trouble. He sold that young man you called my father about, and several others like him, to someone who is using them to develop a way to make drugs work on us as well as they work on humans. He had to kill a number of humans in order to get a single survivor, werewolf.
She thought about the implications. Who wanted the drugs?
I'll know that when Leo tells me who he sold the boy to.
So why didn't he sell me?
She wasn't worth much to the pack. He leaned back in his chair. If an alpha sold one of his pack, he'd have a rebellion on his hands. Besides, Leo went to a lot of trouble to get you. There haven't been any pack members killed or gone missing since you became a member.
It wasn't a question, but she answered him anyway. No.
I think maybe you are the key to Leo's mystery. She couldn't help a snort of derision.
Me? Leo needed a new doormat?
He leaned suddenly forward, knocking his chair over, as he swept her off of her own and stood her on her feet. She thought she was used to the speed and strength of the wolves, but he stole her breath.
As she stood still and shocked, he prowled around her until he came back around the front and kissed her, a long, dark, deep kiss that left her breathless for another reason entirely.
Leo found you and decided that he needed you, he told her. He sent Justin after you because any of his other wolves would know what you were. Even before your change, they'd have known. So he sent a half-crazy wolf because any other would have been unable to attack you.
Hurt, she flinched away from him. He made her sound special, but she knew he was lying. He sounded like he was telling the truth, but she was no prize. She was nothing. For 3 years she had been nothing. He had made her feel special today. But she knew better.
His hands, when they came down on her shoulders, were hard and impossible to resist. Let me tell you something about Omega Wolves, Anna. Look at me.
She blinked back tears, and unable to resist his command, raised her eyes to glare at him.
Almost unique, he said, and gave her a little shake. I work with numbers and percentages all the time, Anna. I might not be able to figure the odds exactly. But I'll tell you that the chances that Justin picked you out to change by sheer chance are almost infinitesimal. No werewolf acting on instincts alone would attack an Omega. And Justin strikes me as a wolf who acts on very little else.
Why not? Why wouldn't he have attacked me? And what is an Omega?
It was evidently the right question, because Charles stilled, his former agitation gone. You are an Omega, Anna. I bet that when you walk into a room, people come to you. I bet complete strangers tell you things they wouldn't tell their own mothers.
Incredulous, she stared at him. You saw Justin this morning. Did he look calm to you?
I saw Justin, he agreed slowly, and I think that in any other pack, he would have been killed shortly after he was made, because his control is not good enough. I don't know why he was not. But I think you allow him to control his wolf, and he hates you for it. You should not be ranked last in your pack.
His hands slid down her shoulders until he held her hands. Oddly, that felt more intimate than his kiss had.
An Omega wolf is like the Indian medicine men, outside of the normal pack rankings. They had to teach you to lower your eyes, didn't they? To submissive wolves, such things are instinctive. You, they had to beat down.
You bring peace to all those around you, Anna, he said intently, his eyes on hers. A werewolf, especially a dominant wolf, is always on the edge of violence. After being shut in an aircraft with too many people for hours, I came into the airport craving bloodshed like a junkie craves his next fix. But when you came up to me, the anger, the hunger, left.
He squeezed her hands. You are a gift, Anna. An Omega wolf in the pack means that more wolves survive the change from human to wolf because they can find control easier with you there. It means that we lose fewer males to stupid dominance fights, because an Omega brings a calmness to all those around him or her.
There was a hole in his argument.
But what about earlier, when you almost changed because you were so angry?
Something happened to his face, an emotion she didn't know him well enough to read, except to know that it was strong. When he spoke, it was with visible effort, as if his throat had tightened.
Most werewolves find someone they love, get married, and spend a long time with their spouse before the wolf accepts her as his mate.
He dropped her gaze and turned away, walking across the room and giving her his back. Without the warmth of his body, she felt cold and alone, scared.
Sometimes it doesn't happen that way, he told the wall. Let it rest there for now, Anna. You have been through enough without this.
I am so tired of being ignorant, she spat, suddenly hugely angry. You've changed all the rules on me, so you can damned well tell me what the new rules are.
As abruptly as the anger had come, it was gone, leaving her shaky and on the verge of tears. He turned, and his eyes had gone gold, reflecting the dim light of the room until they glowed.
Fine. You should have let it be, but you want the truth.
His voice rumbled like thunder, though it wasn't very loud.
My brother Wolf has taken you for his mate. Even if you were nothing to me, I would have never allowed such abuse as you have suffered since your change. But you are mine, and the thought of you hurt, of being able to do nothing about it, is an anger that even an Omega Wolf cannot easily soothe.
Well, she thought, stunned. She'd known he was interested in her, but she'd assumed it had been a casual thing. Leo was the only mated wolf she knew. She didn't know any of the rules. What did it mean that he said his wolf had decided she was his mate? Did she have a choice in the matter? Did the way he aroused her without trying, the way he made her feel as if she'd known him forever and wanted to wake up next to him for the rest of her life, though she'd known him only hours, really, was that his fault?
If you had let me, he said, I'd have courted you gently and won your heart.
He closed his eyes.
I didn't mean to frighten you.
She should have been frightened. Instead, suddenly she felt very, very calm, like the eye in a hurricane of emotion.
I don't like sex, she told him, because it seemed like something he ought to know under the circumstances.
He choked and opened his eyes, their bright color giving way to human dark as she watched.
I wasn't enthusiastic before the change, she told him plainly. And after being passed around like a whore for a year until Isabel put a stop to it, I like it even less.
His mouth tightened, but he didn't say anything, so she continued.
And I won't be forced. Never again.
She pulled up the sleeves of her shirt to show him the long scars on the underside of her arm, wrist to elbow. She'd made them with a silver knife, and if Isabel hadn't found her, she'd have killed herself.
This is why Isabel made Leo stop making me sleep with whatever male pleased him enough. She found me and kept me alive. After that, I bought a gun and silver bullets.
He growled softly, but not at her, she was pretty sure.
I'm not threatening to kill myself, but you need to know this about me because if you want to be my mate, I won't be like Leo. I won't let you sleep around with anyone else. I won't be forced either. I've had enough. If that makes me a dog in the manger, so be it. But if I am yours, then you damned well are going to be mine.
A dog in the manger?
He let out a gusty breath of air that might have been a half laugh. He closed his eyes again and said in a reasonable tone,
"If Leo survives tonight, I shall be very surprised. If I survive you, I'll be equally surprised."
He looked at her.
"And very little surprises me anymore."
He strode across the floor, picking up his chair and setting it where it belonged as he passed it. He stopped just in front of her and touched her raised chin gently, then laughed. Still smiling, he tucked a piece of her hair behind her ear.
"I promise you will enjoy sex with me," he murmured.
Somehow she managed to keep her spine straight. She wasn't ready to fall into a puddle at his feet quite yet.
"Isabel said you were a good lover."
He laughed again.
"You have no need for jealousy. Sex with Isabel meant no more to me than a good belly scratch, and rather less to her, I think. Nothing worth repeating for either of us."
There was a whisper of sound outside the room, and he took her hand.
"Time for us to go."
He paid polite compliments to the meal as he handed over a credit card to a young-looking man who called him Sir and smelled of werewolf. The owner of the restaurant, Anna supposed.
"So where would you like to go next?" she asked as she stepped out onto the busy sidewalk.
He pulled his jacket on the rest of the way and dodged a woman in high heels who carried a leather briefcase.
"Somewhere with fewer people."
"We could go to the zoo," she suggested. "This time of year it's pretty deserted, even with the kids out of school for Thanksgiving."
He turned his head and started to speak when something in a window caught his attention. He grabbed her and threw her on the ground, falling on top of her. There was a loud bang like a backfiring car, and he jerked once, then lay still on top of her. 3.
It had been a long time since he'd been shot, but the sizzling burn of the silver bullet was still familiar.
He hadn't been quite fast enough, and the crowd of people made sure that he couldn't go after the car that had taken off as soon as the gun had fired. He hadn't even gotten a good look at the shooter, just an impression.
"Charles?"
Beneath him, Anna's eyes were black with shock, and she patted his shoulders.
"Was someone shooting at us? Are you all right?"
"Yes," he said, though he couldn't really assess the damage until he moved, which he didn't want to much. "Stay where you are until I can get a look," said a firm voice. "I'm an EMT."
The command in the EMT's voice forced Charles to move. He didn't take orders from anyone except his father. He pushed himself off of Anna and got to his feet, then leaned down and grabbed her hand to pull her up from the frozen sidewalk.
"Damn it, man, you're bleeding. Don't be stupid," snapped the stranger. "Sit down."
Being shot had enraged the wolf in him, and Charles turned to snarl at the EMT, a competent-looking middle-aged man with sandy hair and a graying red mustache. Then Anna squeezed his hand, which she still held, and said,
"Thank you,"
to the EMT, and then to Charles.
"Let him take a look."
And he was able to hold back the snarl. He did growl low in his throat, though, when the stranger looked at his wound. Never show weakness to a possible enemy. He felt too exposed on the sidewalk. Too many people were looking at him. They had acquired quite an audience.
"Ignore him," Anna told the EMT. "He gets grumpy when he's hurt."
George, the werewolf who owned the restaurant, brought out a chair for him to sit on. Someone had called the police. Two cars came with flashing lights and sirens that hurt his ears, followed by an ambulance. The bullet had cut through skin and a fine layer of muscle across the back of his shoulders without doing a lot of damage, he was told. Did he have any enemies? It was Anna who told them that he'd just flown in from Montana, that it must have been just a drive-by shooting, though this wasn't the usual neighborhood for that kind of crime. If the cop had had a werewolf's nose, he would never have let her lie pass. He was a seasoned cop, however, and her answer made him a little uneasy. But when Charles showed him his Montana driver's license, he relaxed. Anna's presence allowed Charles to submit to cleaning and bandaging and questioning, but nothing would make him get into an ambulance and be dragged to a hospital, even though silver bullet wounds healed human slow. Even now, he could feel the hot ache of the silver as it seeped into his muscles. While he sat beneath the hands of strangers and fought not to lose control, he couldn't get the image of the shooter out of his head. He'd looked in the window and saw the reflection of the gun, then the face of the person who held it, wrapped in a winter scarf and wearing dark glasses. Not enough to identify the gunman, just a glimpse. But he would swear that the man had not been looking at him when his gloved finger pulled the trigger. He'd been looking at Anna. Which didn't make much sense. Why would someone be trying to kill Anna? They didn't go to the zoo. While he used the restaurant bathroom to clean up, George procured a jacket to cover the bandages so Charles wouldn't have to advertise his weakness to everyone who saw him. This time Anna didn't object when he asked her to call a taxi. His phone rang on the way back to Anna's apartment, but he silenced it without looking at it. It might have been his father, Bran, who had an uncanny knack for knowing when he'd been hurt. But he had no desire to talk with the Morocco while the taxi driver could hear every word. More probably it was Jaime. George would have called his alpha as soon as Charles was shot. In either case, they would wait until he was someplace more private. He made Anna wait in the taxi when they got to her apartment building until he had a chance to take a good look around. No one had followed them from the loop, but the most likely assailants were Leo's people, and they all knew where Anna lived. He hadn't recognized the shooter, but then he didn't know every werewolf in Chicago. Anna was patient with him. She didn't argue about waiting, but the cab driver looked at him as though he were crazy. Her patience helped his control, which was shakier than it had been in a long time. He wondered how he'd be behaving if his Anna hadn't been an Omega whose soothing effect was almost good enough to override the protective rage roused by the attempt on her life. The painful burn of his shoulders, worsening as silver-caused wounds always did for a while, didn't help his temperament, nor did the knowledge that his ability to fight was impaired. Someone was trying to kill Anna. It didn't make sense, but somewhere during the trip back to Oak Park, he'd accepted that it was so. Satisfied there was no immediate threat in or around the apartment building, he held out his hand to Anna to help her out of the taxi and then paid the fare, all the while letting his eyes roam, looking for anything out of place. But there was nothing. Just inside the front door of the lobby, a man who was getting his mail smiled and greeted Anna. They exchanged a sentence or two. But after a good look at Charles's face, she started up the stairs. Charles had not been able to parse a word she'd said, which was a very bad sign. Grimly, he followed her up the stairs, shoulders throbbing with the beat of his heart. He flexed his fingers as she unlocked her door. His joints ached with the need to change, but he held off, only just. If he was this bad in human form, the wolf would be in control if he shifted. He sat on the futon and watched her open her fridge and then her freezer. Finally, she dug in the depths of a cabinet and came out with a large can. She opened it and dumped the unappealing contents into a pot, which she set on the stove. Then she knelt on the floor in front of him. She touched his face and said very clearly, "Change," and a number of other things that brushed by his ears like a flight of butterflies. He closed his eyes against her. There was some urgent reason he shouldn't change, but he'd forgotten it while he'd been watching her. "You have 5 hours before the meeting," she said slowly, her voice making more sense once his eyes were shut. "If you can change to the wolf and back, it will help you heal."
"I have no control," he told her.
That was it. That was the reason.
"The wound's not that bad. It's the silver. My changing will be too dangerous for you. I can't."
There was a pause, and then she said, "If I am your mate, your wolf won't harm me no matter how much control you lack, right?" She sounded more hopeful than certain, and he couldn't think clearly enough to know if she was correct. Dominants were touchy about taking suggestions from lesser wolves, so she left Charles to make up his own mind while she stirred the beef stew to keep it from burning. Not that burning would make it taste any worse. She'd bought it on sale about 6 months ago, and had never been hungry enough to eat it. But it had protein, which he needed after being wounded, and it was the only meat in the house. The wound had looked painful but not unmanageable to her, and none of the EMTs had seemed overly concerned. She took the metal ball out of the pocket of her jeans and felt it burn her skin. While the EMTs had been working on his back, Charles had caught her eye and then looked at the small, bloody slug on the sidewalk. At his silent direction, she'd pocketed it. Now she set it on her counter. Silver was bad. It meant that it really hadn't been a random shooting. She hadn't seen who fired the shot, but she could only assume that it had been one of her packmates, probably Justin. Silver injuries wouldn't heal in minutes or hours, and Charles would have to go wounded to Leo's house. Claws clicked on the hardwood floor, and the fox-colored wolf who was Charles walked over and collapsed on the floor near enough to rest his head on one of her feet. There were bits and pieces of torn cloth caught here and there on his body. A glance at the futon told her he hadn't bothered to strip out of his clothes, and the bandages hadn't survived the change. The cut across his shoulder blades was deep and oozing blood. He seemed more weary than wild and ravenous, though, so she assumed his fears about how much control he'd have had not been borne out. An out-of-control werewolf, in her experience, would be growling and pacing, not lying quietly at her feet. She put the stew in a bowl and set it in front of him. He took a bite and then paused after the first mouthful.
"I know," she told him apologetically. "It's not haute cuisine. I could go downstairs and see if Kara has any steaks or roasts I could borrow."
He went back to eating, but she knew from healing her own wounds that he'd be better off with more meat. Kara wouldn't be home, but Anna had a key, and she knew Kara wouldn't mind if she borrowed a roast as long as she replaced it. Charles seemed to be engrossed in his meal, so she started for the door. Before she was halfway there, he'd abandoned the food and stalked at her heels. It hurt him to move. She wasn't quite sure how she knew that, since he neither limped nor slowed visibly.
"You need to stay here," she told him. "I'll be right back."
But when she tried to open the door, he stepped in front of it.
"Charles," she said,
and then she saw his eyes and swallowed hard. There was nothing of Charles left in the wolf's yellow gaze. Leaving the apartment wasn't an option. She walked back to the kitchen and stopped by the food bowl she'd left him. He stayed at the door for a moment before following her. When he had finished eating, she sat down on the futon. He jumped up beside her, put his head in her lap, and closed his eyes with a heavy sigh. He opened one eye and then closed it again. She ran her fingers through his pelt, carefully avoiding the wound. Were they mated? She thought not. Wouldn't something like that have a more formal ceremony? She hadn't actually told him that she accepted him, no more than he had really asked her. Still, she closed her eyes and let his scent flow through her, and her hand closed possessively in a handful of fur. When she opened her eyes, she found herself staring into his clear gold ones. His phone rang from somewhere underneath her. She reached down to the floor and snagged the remnant of his pants and pulled the phone out and checked the number. She turned it so he could see the display.
"It says Father," she told him.
But evidently the wolf was still in control because he didn't even look at the phone.
"I guess you can call him back when you're back to yourself."
She hoped that would be soon. Even with silver poisoning, he ought to be better in a few hours, she hoped. The phone quit ringing for a moment, then started again. It rang three times, stopped, then rang three more times, stopped. When it rang again, she answered it reluctantly.
"Hello?
Is he all right?"
She remembered the werewolf who had brought out a chair for Charles to sit on while the EMTs worked on him. He must have called them a rock.
"I think so. The wound wasn't so bad, pretty much a deep cut across his shoulder blades, but the bullet was silver, and he seems to be having a bad reaction to it."
There was a little pause.
"Can I speak to him?"
"He's in wolf form," she told him, "but he is listening to you now."
One of his ears was cocked toward the phone.
"Do you need help with Charles? His reaction to silver can be a little extreme."
"No, he's not causing any problems."
"Silver leaves Charles's wolf uncontrolled," crooned the Maroc softly. "But he's giving you no problems? Why would that be? She'd never met the Marak, but she wasn't dumb. That croon was dangerous. Did he think she had something to do with Charles being shot and was now holding him prisoner somewhere? She tried to answer his question, despite the possible embarrassment.
Charles thinks that his wolf has chosen me as a mate.
In less than one full day?
It did sound dumb when he said it that way. Yes.
She couldn't keep the uncertainty out of her voice, though, and it bothered Charles. He rolled to his feet and growled softly.
Charles also said I was an Omega wolf, she told his father. That might have something to do with it as well.
Silence lengthened, and she began to think that the cell phone might have dropped the connection. Then the Marak laughed softly. Oh, his brother is going to tease him unmercifully about this. Why don't you tell me everything that has happened? Start with picking Charles up at the airport, please. Her knuckles were white on the steering wheel, but Charles was in no mood to ease Anna's fears. He'd tried to leave her behind. He had no desire to have Anna in the middle of the fight that was probable tonight. He didn't want her hurt, and he didn't want her to see him in the role that had been chosen for him so long ago.
I know where Leo lives, she told him. If you don't take me with you, I'll just hire a taxi and follow you. You are not going in there alone. You still smell of your wounds, and they'll take that as a sign of weakness.
The truth of her words had almost made him cruel. It had been on the tip of his tongue to ask her what she thought she, an Omega female, could do to help him in a fight, but his brother Wolf had frozen his tongue. She had been wounded enough, and the Wolf wouldn't allow any more. It was the only time he could ever remember that the Wolf put the restraints on his human half rather than the reverse. The words would have been wrong, too. He remembered her holding that marble rolling pin. She might not be aggressive, but she had a limit to how far she could be pushed. He found himself meekly agreeing to her company, though as they got closer to Leo's house in Naperville, his repentance hadn't been up to making him happy with her presence.
Leo's house is on 15 acres, she told him, big enough for the pack to hunt on, but we still have to be pretty quiet.
Her voice was tight. He thought she was trying to make conversation with him to keep her anxiety in check. Angry as he was, he couldn't help but come to her aid.
It's hard to hunt in the big cities, he agreed.
Then to check her reaction, because they'd never had a chance to really finish their discussion about what she was to him, he said,
I'll take you for a real hunt in Montana. You'll never want to live near a big city again. We usually hunt deer or elk, but the moose populations are up high enough that we hunt them sometimes, too. Moose are a real challenge.
I think I'd rather stick to rabbits if it's all the same to you, she said. Mostly I just trail behind the hunt.
She gave him a little smile.
I think I watched Bambi one too many times.
He laughed. Yes, he was going to keep her. She was giving up without a fight. A challenge, perhaps, he thought about her telling him that she wasn't much interested in sex, but not a fight.
Hunting is part of what we are. We aren't cats to prolong the kill, and the animals we hunt need thinning to keep their herd strong and healthy. But if it bothers you, you can follow behind the hunt in Montana, too. You'll still enjoy the run.
She drove up to a keypad on a post in front of a graying cedar gate and pushed in 4 numbers. After a pause, the chain on the top of the gate began to move, and the gate slid back along the wall. He'd been here twice before. The first time had been more than a century ago, and the house had been little more than a cabin. There had been 50 acres then, and the alpha had been a little Irish Catholic named Willie O'Shaughnessy, who had fit in surprisingly well with his mostly German and Lutheran neighbors. The second time had been in the early 20th century for Willie's funeral. Willie had been old, nearly as old as the Marak. There was a madness that came sometimes to those who lived too long. When the first signs of it had manifested in him, Willie had quit eating, a display of the willpower that had made him an alpha. Charles remembered his father's grief at Willie's passing. They, Charles and his brother Samuel, had been worried for months afterward that their father would decide to follow Willie. Willie's house and lands had passed on to the next alpha,
a German werewolf who was married to O'Shaughnessy's daughter. Charles couldn't remember what had happened to that one, or even his name. There had been several alphas here after him, though, before Leo took over. Willie and a handful of fine German stonemasons had built the house with a craftsmanship that would have been prohibitively expensive to replace now. Several of the windows were rippled, showing their age. He remembered when those windows had been new. Charles hated being reminded how old he was. Anna turned off the engine and started opening her door, but he stopped her.
Wait a moment.
A hint of unease was brushing across the senses bequeathed to him by his gifted mother, and he'd learned to pay attention. He looked at Anna and scowled. She was too vulnerable. If something happened to him, they'd tear her to bits.
I need you to change, he told her.
Something inside him relaxed. That was it.
If something happens to me, I want you to run like hell, get somewhere safe, then call my father and tell him to get you out of here.
She hesitated. It was not his nature to explain himself. As a dominant wolf in his father's pack, he seldom had to. For her, though, he would make an effort.
There is something important about you being in wolf form when we go in there.
He shrugged.
I've learned to trust my instincts.
All right. She took a while. He had time to open his notebook and look at her list. He told Justin that Leo could have Isabel and his first five. According to Anna's list, other than Isabel, of those six, only Boyd was on the list of names his father had given him. If Justin was Leo's second, then there wasn't a wolf other than Leo who was a threat to him. The ache of his wound gave lie to that thought, so he corrected it. There were none of them who would give him a run for his money in a straightforward fight. Anna finished her change and sat panting heavily on the driver's side seat. She was beautiful, he thought, coal black with a dash of white over her nose. She was on the small side for a werewolf, but still much larger than a German shepherd. Her eyes were a pale, pale blue, which was strange because her human eyes were brown.
Are you ready?
He asked her. She whined as she got to her feet, her claws making small holes in the leather seat. She shook herself once as if she'd been wet, then bobbed her head once. He didn't see anyone watching them from the windows, but there was a small security camera cleverly tucked into a bit of the gingerbread woodwork on the porch. He got out of the SUV, making sure that he didn't show any sign of the pain he was in. He checked in the bathroom of Anna's house, and he didn't think the wound would slow him appreciably now that the worst of the silver poisoning had passed. He'd considered acting more hurt than he was, and he might have if he had been sure that it was Leo who was responsible for all the dead. Acting wounded might lead Leo to attack him, and Charles had no intention of killing Leo until he knew just exactly what had been going on. He held the SUV door open until Anna hopped out, then closed it and walked with her to the house. He didn't bother knocking on the door. This wasn't a friendly visit. Inside, the house had changed a lot. Dark paneling had been bleached light, and electric lights replaced the old gas chandeliers. Anna walked beside him, but he didn't need her guidance to find the formal parlor, because that was the only room with people in it. Everything else in the house might have changed, but they had left Willie's pride and joy. The huge hand-carved granite fireplace still dominated the parlor. Isabel, who liked to be the center of attention, was perched on the polished cherry mantel. Leo was positioned squarely in front of her. Justin stood on his left, Boyd on his right. The other three men Charles had allowed him were seated in dainty Victorian-era chairs. All of them except for Leo himself were dressed in dark pinstriped suits. Leo wore nothing but a pair of black slacks, revealing that he was tanned and fit. The effect of their united threat was somewhat mitigated by the pinkish purple of the upholstery and walls, and by Isabel, who was dressed in jeans and a half-shirt of the same color. Charles took two steps into the room and stopped. Anna pressed against his legs, not hard enough to unbalance him, just enough to remind him that she was there. No one spoke, because it was for him to break the silence first. He took a deep breath into his lungs and held it, waiting for what his senses could tell him. He had gotten more from his mother than his skin and features, more than the ability to change faster than the other werewolves. She had given him the ability to see, not with his eyes, but with his whole spirit. And there was something sick in Leo's pack. He could feel the wrongness of it. He looked into Leo's clear sky-blue eyes and saw nothing that he hadn't seen before. No hint of madness. Not him, then, but someone in his pack. He looked at the three wolves he had not met, and he saw what Anna had meant about their looks. Leo was not unhandsome in his own Danish Viking sort of way, but he was a warrior, and he looked like a warrior. Boyd had a long blade of a nose, and the military cut of his hair made his ears appear to stick out even farther than they really did. All the wolves Charles didn't know looked like the sort of men who modeled tuxedos at a rental shop. Thin and edgy, with no real flesh to mar the lines of a jacket. Despite differences in coloring, there was a certain sameness about them. Isabel pulled her bare feet onto the mantle with the rest of her and heaved a big sigh. He ignored her impatience because she wasn't important just now. Leo was. Charles met the Alpha's eyes and said, "The Maroc has sent me here to ask you why you sold your child into bondage." Clearly it wasn't the question Leo had expected. Isabel had thought it was Anna, and Charles hadn't disabused her of the notion. They would deal with Anna, too. But his father's question was a better starting place, because it was unexpected. "I have no children," said Leo. Charles shook his head. "All your wolves are your children, Leo, you know that. They are yours to love and feed, to guard and protect, to guide and to teach. You sold a young man named Alan Mackenzie Fraser. To whom and why?"
"He wasn't pack." Leo spread his arms, palms outward. "It is expensive to keep so many wolves happy here in the city. I needed the money. I am happy to give you the name of the buyer, though I believe he was only acting as a middleman."
True. All true. But Leo was being very careful how he worded his reply.
"My father would like the name and the method you used to contact him."
Leo nodded at one of the handsome men who passed Charles with his eyes on the ground, though he spared an instant to glare at Anna. She flattened her ears at him and growled. He had been a poor influence on her, Charles thought unrepentantly.
"Is there anything more I can help you with?" Leo asked politely.
They had, all of Leo's wolves, used Isabel's trick with perfume, but Charles had a keen nose, and Leo was sad.
"You haven't updated your pack membership for 5 or 6 years, Charles said, wondering at Leo's reaction.
He'd been met with defiance, anger, fear, but never with sadness.
"I thought you might catch that. Did you and Anna compare lists?" "Yes, I had something of a coup attempt I had to put down a little harshly."
Truth, but again, not all of it. Leo had a lawyer's understanding of how to be careful with the truth and use it to lie by leading a false trail.
"Is that why you killed all the women of your pack? Did they all rebel against you?"
"There weren't so many women. There never are."
Again, there was something he wasn't catching. Leo hadn't been the wolf who had attacked young Fraser. It had been Justin. Leo's wolf was back. He handed Charles a note with a name and phone number written in purple ink. Charles tucked the note in his pocket and then nodded.
"You are right. There are not enough females, so those we have ought to be protected, not killed. Did you kill them yourself?"
"All the women? No."
"Which of them did you kill?"
Leo didn't answer, and Charles felt his wolf perk up as the hunt commenced.
"You didn't kill any of the women," Charles said.
He looked at the model-perfect men, and at Justin, who was beautiful in an unfinished sort of way. Leo was protecting someone. Charles looked up at Isabel, who loved beautiful men. Isabel, who was older than old Willie O'Shaughnessy had been when he'd begun to go crazy. He wondered how long Leo had known she was mad. He looked back at the Alpha.
"You should have asked the Maroc for help."
Leo shook his head.
You know what he would have done. He'd have killed her.
Charles would dearly have loved to see what Isabel was doing, but he couldn't afford to take his eyes off Leo. A cornered wolf was a dangerous wolf.
And how many have died instead? How many of your pack are lost? The women she killed for jealousy, and their mates you had to kill to protect her? The wolves who rebelled at what the two of you were doing? How many?
Leo raised his chin.
None for 3 years.
Rage raised its ugly head.
Yes, Charles agreed very softly.
Not since you had your little bully boy attack a defenseless woman and change her without her consent. A woman who you then proceeded to brutalize.
If I'd protected her, Isabel would have hated her, Leo explained. I forced Isabel to protect her instead. It worked, Charles. Isabel has been stable for 3 years.
Until she'd come to Anna's today and realized that Charles was interested in Anna. Isabel had never liked anyone paying attention to other females when she was around. He risked a glance and saw that though she hadn't moved from the mantle, Isabel's legs were back to dangling down so she could hop down quickly if she wanted to. Her eyes had changed and watched with pale impatience for the violence she knew was to come. She licked her lips and rocked her weight from side to side in her eagerness. Charles felt sick at the waste of it all. He turned his attention back to the Alpha.
No deaths, because you have an Omega to keep her calm, and because there are no females to compete with except for Anna, who doesn't want any of your wolves, not after they raped her on your orders.
It kept Anna alive, Leo insisted. Kept them both alive.
He ducked his head. An appeal for protection.
Tell your father that she is stable. Tell him I'll see she doesn't harm anyone else.
She tried to kill Anna today, Charles said gently. And if she hadn't...
She is insane, Leo.
He watched the last trace of hope leave Leo's face. The Alpha knew Charles wouldn't let Isabel live. She was too dangerous, too unpredictable. Leo knew that he was dead, too. He had worked too hard to save his mate. Leo didn't give any warning before he attacked, but Charles had been ready for him. Leo wasn't the kind of wolf to submit easily to death. There would be no bared throats in this fight. But they both knew who would win. Anna had been stunned to stillness by what Leo had revealed, but that ended when Leo attacked. She couldn't help the little yip she let out. Any more than she could help her instinctive lunge forward to protect Charles. A strong pair of workmen's hands gripped her by the ruff of her neck and pulled her back despite the scrabbling of her claws on the hardwood floor.
Here now, Boyd's rumble hit her ears. Steady on. This isn't your fight.
His voice, one she was used to obeying, calmed her so she could think. It also helped that Charles avoided Leo's first strike with a minimal movement of his shoulders. The other wolves had come to their feet, and part of her registered Justin's insistent chanting, "Kill him! Kill him!" She wasn't sure which wolf he wanted to die. He hated Leo for controlling him and for being Isabel's mate. Maybe he didn't care which one died. Leo struck 3 times in rapid succession, missing each time. He'd committed to the last blow, and when it didn't land, he had to take an awkward step forward. Charles took advantage of the stumble and stepped into Leo, and in a graceful movement she couldn't quite follow, did something to Leo's shoulder that had the Alpha roaring in rage and pain. The next few things happened so fast, Anna was never certain in what order they occurred. There was a rapid double bark of a gun. Boyd's hands loosened their grip on her fur as he swore, and Isabel gave a frenetic, excited laugh. It took Anna only a glance to see what had happened. Isabel was holding a gun, watching the fight, waiting for another clear shot at Charles. Anna broke free of Boyd's loosened grip and sprinted across the room. From the mantel, Isabel looked Anna squarely in her eyes and said sharply, "Stop, Anna!" She was so sure of Anna's obedience, she didn't even wait to make certain Anna listened before turning her attention back to the battling men. Anna felt